You're listening to Let's Talk on Talk Radio Europe. Now, in 1942, a team at the University of Chicago achieved what no one had before, a nuclear chain reaction. At the forefront of that breakthrough stood Enrico Fermi. If you've ever studied physics at school, which I did, you will know all about Enrico Fermi. If you don't, you're about to find out. There's a brilliant new book out called The Last Man Who Knew Everything, and its author, David Schwartz, joins us now. Welcome, David.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being with you.
There's probably quite a few of us in the male populace who have had, let's call it a heated conversation. At the end of it, they said, oh, you think you know everything, don't you? Well, it must have been nice as Enrico Fermi to actually say, well, yes, I probably do, actually.
Well, I'm not sure he knew everything about everything, but he certainly knew everything about physics. He was, he was the last guy who really did. I mean, I'm sure his wife wouldn't have said, you know everything about everything, but he certainly did know everything about the physics of his time and was unique in that respect.
And finding out about him for you has not been that easy, has it really? I mean, the record of his life is thin, to say the least.
Well, you know, he was very reluctant to reveal anything about his personal thoughts or feelings. There are no letters to his wife that I was able to find, no diaries. You know, he thought about physics all day long, every day, unless he happened to be going on a hike or swimming with friends and colleagues. So he was very reticent about his personal life. What I was able to do was triangulate, in a sense, from the many memoirs of people who knew him and wrote about what it was like to be with him and be around him, not least of whom was his wife, who wrote a wonderful memoir about her marriage to him, called Adams and the Family. So I was able to get a picture of him really by triangulating with all the people who knew him. And in most respects, it was a very consistent picture that these memoirs present.
Yeah, it's interesting that it was a tragedy, really, which got him on his way and kind of made him escape into science. And that was when he was 13 and his older brother died.
His older brother died. He never really spoke about it, but it was obviously a shattering experience to him. His older brother and he had been inseparable during their early youth. And it is said that his older brother, Giulio, was in fact as smart, if not smarter, than Enrico. So it's staggering to think of what the two of them might have done had Giulio lived. But Giulio died in rather unexpectedly in routine surgery when Giulio was 14, leaving really devastated Enrico behind. Enrico was fortunate that a classmate of Giulio's, who was also named Enrico, Enrico Persico, befriended Enrico Fermi, and the two of them then became fast friends again.
And I guess that made him almost withdraw into himself, thus giving his brain, I guess, the room to just completely escape into science.
I think that's right. The two of them sort of were boy scientists together, and they just did science all day long, every day, and he became absolutely obsessed with it. So by the time a friend of his father's got to talking to him one day, it was clear that Fermi had absorbed a huge amount of science already, and this friend of his father's decided to mentor him and structure Fermi's learning in a way so that Fermi was able to learn all of classical physics by the time he was 18.
Amazing. And I guess it's really the American part of his life that made him famous from that moment on, wasn't it?
You know, I think he came to the United States in 1939. He was very famous among physicists before that. In fact, he won the Nobel Prize in 1938 while he was still in Italy, but used that opportunity of the Nobel Prize in Stockholm to escape fascist Italy with his wife and his family and move to the United States. But yes, it's the work that he did in the Manhattan Project that I think most Americans, most people around the world know him for, because he was at the very center of the Manhattan Project, which was, of course, the top secret American project to build the first atomic bombs.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's not underestimate his worth in science. I mean, he ranks very, very high in 20th century physicists. We've got people like Einstein and Niels Bohr talked about in the same breath as Enrico Fermi.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that Fermi is up there with Einstein or Bohr, but he's certainly up there with Heisenberg and Dirac and Schrodinger. and Pauli in terms of his importance in 20th century physics. And his name is littered throughout the field. I have a friend who actually helped me with some of the physics aspects of the book, who said yesterday to me that he can't have a conversation with another physicist for more than 25 minutes without mentioning Fermi's name at least 10 times in various contexts. It's really amazing how much of physics is dependent on work that Fermi did.
And that discovery that you mention, that kind of catapulted him into the kind of public domain, was in spring 1939, working in Colombia with a Hungarian physicist. And he basically set out to answer a question about uranium atoms, and the rest is effectively history. Can you kind of fill us in briefly on the story?
Yeah, so in 1939, he arrived in New York. He had just won the Nobel Prize, in part for experiments that discovered heavy elements that were heavier than uranium, that created heavier elements. Now, 2 weeks later, Bohr arrived in New York, and with the news that German scientists had been replicating these experiments that Fermi did in Rome in 1934, and had discovered that Fermi was wrong, that Fermi had not been creating elements that were heavier than uranium. He had been splitting the uranium atom, and it was a monumental mistake on Fermi's part, one that he was always a little abashed about, one of the very few mistakes he made. But it was very clear very quickly that this is exactly what had been going on. And Szilard had had this idea that if you could get an atom to release neutrons from its nucleus, that it might create a chain reaction with other atoms. They might hit other atoms and split those, and on, in sort of a cascade that would eventually lead to some kind of explosive reaction. And Szilard collared Fermi and said, now that we've figured out that the uranium atom has been split, let's do some experiments to see if a chain reaction can be created. And Fermi was a little skeptical of this at first, but I think in part because he understood the consequences of doing that, but was persuaded by Szilard to do some experiments, initially at Columbia, and then the final experiments done at the University of Chicago in 1942 to create a sustained, controlled nuclear chain reaction, which sort of proved the concept of a nuclear explosive in a way that didn't blow things up, and also enabled scientists to create plutonium, which was one of the elements of one of the materials out of which atomic bombs were made. So it was a very important time in nuclear physics and also in the security of the United States and the West when they did these experiments to create a sustained controlled nuclear chain reaction.
The way he did that has a lovely element of his kind of humanness about it. I mean, he built what's called a pile, basically on a doubles squash court in order to do this while he was working out whether this reaction would go critical, and then had a break for lunch halfway through, as you do.
Yes. He did this several times in his career where at the high point of a crucial experiment, he said, "Don't time for lunch." And I think he did it in part because he thought it was a little dramatic, and in part because he was a creature of habit, and he didn't want things to interrupt his daily life. I mean, he liked breaking for lunch. So, in the middle of the experiment on December 2nd, 1942, when they were creating the world's very first nuclear reaction, he said, "Let's break for lunch." And they broke for lunch, and an hour later came back, and by mid-afternoon they had what they had been looking for, the world's first chain reaction.
I've chatted on the show before about a guy called Richard Garwin, who was one of Enrico Fermi's students, who Fermi went on to call a genius himself. But Garwin was with him in this kind of nuclear weapons program. Garwin subsequently devoted much of his career to ensure that nuclear weapons were never again going to be used. What was Fermi's view on the whole thing, having created something which was obviously good because it was atomic energy, but it was bad because it was a weapon?
Well, it's very interesting you say that. Garwin is a brilliant, brilliant man. And you're right. Fermi always considered him one of his very best students, if not his best student. Garwin spent much of his life, and he's still alive and still active, working on arms control and disarmament issues. Fermi was reluctant to be very active, at least publicly, about these things. He felt that he was best suited in a situation where there were definite answers to scientific questions, and his expertise was scientific. It wasn't political or public policy. He did get involved in public policy after the war, was an advisor to the Atomic Energy Commission, and while he was an advisor to the Atomic Energy Commission, strongly opposed the development of the hydrogen bomb in 1949 when those advisors were asked their opinion. The opinion was unanimously against going ahead with the hydrogen bomb. Fermi and his colleague Isidore Isaac Rabi were particularly concerned about it and wrote a separate memo calling the hydrogen bomb by its very nature an evil that should not be pursued. And it's one of the very few times that Fermi ever made moral arguments about things at all. But what then happened was Truman overrode those recommendations and went full speed ahead with the development of the hydrogen bomb. And Fermi spent the next 2 years at Los Alamos over the summers trying to demonstrate that the hydrogen bomb was not technically possible. And in fact, it took a real breakthrough on the part of Edward Teller and a mathematician named Stan Ulam to do that. And by the way, Garwin spent summers at Los Alamos with Fermi working on the hydrogen bomb project, also somewhat skeptical about whether it would work or not.
Right.
So, but I think Garwin tells the story that when he was with Fermi during Fermi's last days, Fermi expressed regret that he wasn't more politically active on matters relating to nuclear weapons. But he just wasn't. He never felt comfortable as a public policy guru.
Interesting. And his career was short-lived, wasn't it? I mean, he died of stomach cancer, aged only 53.
Yes, he was 53, and it is remarkable to think of how much he accomplished in his very short life. He died of stomach cancer, which may have been caused by radiation from the Rome experiments, where they were working with very, very radioactive substances and holding them very close to themselves, particularly Fermi in these experiments. So, it was a very tragic short life, and he did an enormous amount during it and was productive right up till the end.
And he's been called by yourself the greatest Italian scientist since Galileo. That's quite an accolade to bestow upon somebody, and he certainly deserves it, doesn't he?
Well, I think he does. You know, after he died, his good friend Eduardo Amaldi, who after the war in Rome really rebuilt Italian physics and rebuilt European physics, decided that all of Fermi's papers that had been stored at the University of Rome should go to the Galileo archives up in Pisa, which is where they are now. You can find them in the same building that all of Galileo's papers are stored in. And I think he felt it was appropriate for them to be there, given Fermi's stature. And I think subsequent Italian physicists, and I think physicists worldwide, would agree. He really created modern Italian physics and was simply the best Italian physicist since Galileo.
And the last man who knew everything. That's the title of the book, The Life and Times of Enrico Fermi, Father of the Nuclear Age. Thank you ever so much for joining us today, David. Much appreciated.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you very much.